Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Bank Holiday Monday, May the 4th.
Coming up on the show, we chat to a great of Irish athletics, Sonia O'Sullivan, on life under lockdown in Australia and how athletics may emerge on the other side.
And there is light at the end of the tunnel. Golf will be played again here in Ireland from May the 18th. So we talk to Golf Ireland CEO Mark Kennelly.
Hopefully that's the start of it, Ruby. And football referee David Goff tells us how he and his colleagues will run for Pieta House and how he'd feel about a return for big games.
So Marie, how was your weekend?
You know that this weekend was supposed to be the start of the GAA Championships, the Champions Cup semi-finals as well. So I guess I'm in mourning a little bit, Ruby.
This weekend was supposed to be the start of the new National Hunt season, Marie. It would have ended Saturday in Punchestown and would have started again on Monday. That's what I would have known it as, more so than the GAA Championship. But we each have our own tastes, I suppose.
Yeah, we do. And I suppose we could have been sad about it, but when at least there is some sort of a plan in place now, we can kind of start looking forward and start making plans. It feels like it's been a while coming, but the dates do feel off a little bit still, but at least there's some anyway.
There are, but I'm not certain what clarity we have as to what's going to happen on May the 18th. I must say, reading yesterday's papers, which obviously are today's chip papers, or maybe they're not in this day and age, but I thought Colm O'Rourke's article in the Independent was brilliant. Let the children play, and as to why children should be let back playing in the GAA sooner than rather than later. And as you look further into more sports, all right, racing is going to resume in France on May the 11th. Nobody knew in horse racing, and still don't know from the Taoiseach speech on Friday night, does racing fall into the June 29th category? Is it going to be on June the 8th with the Marts? Is it one of those sports behind closed doors, or is there scope for it to start on May the 18th? Racing is very unclear as to where it stands. There's a date of May the 18th, but what's going to happen? Who knows?
And there's a few dates after that as well. So everything going to plan, and the numbers keep going the way they want them to. There will be behind closed door sporting activities on the 29th of June, and then on 20th of July there will be some contact sports like soccer and GA, and then the 10th of August, again all going to plan, there will be some rugby. I mean, it is hard to tell that this will come through, but...
It is, and how do you separate rugby from GAA and soccer? All right, I know rugby is completely contact and physical, and tackle is allowed, whereas literally GAA, it shouldn't be. But they are contact sports to a sense. I'm not so sure how one gets separated from the other, or where they drew up the plans for it. And I suppose listening to the Taoiseach on Friday night, he did think there could be an All-Ireland, Marie. That surely gave you some bit of hope for the weekend, did it?
It didn't. It's like, it is very hard to even, I think, say that out loud, because we've mentioned it a couple of times before that the GAA is in a different scenario because it's not the industry that horse racing or professional football might be. These are amateur players and they have a different choice to make. It's not just about returning to work. I think Ruby as well will probably be led by other countries. I know we've spoken as well about Germany and looking to them, and we see today La Liga have just released a statement and they're going to go back training very, very shortly, and they're hoping for a June restart for games. So they're moving ahead with that, and the Serie A as well. They're going to return to training next week. They had decided to push it back towards the middle of May 18th, and then they had a change of heart today at the government and have decided that in the coming days they can go back training. So when we see other countries starting to resume training, and which essentially at some stage is going to become contact training, it does give us a bit of hope. But we do have to be mindful as well that whatever is in the best interest of public, and you know, maybe Colm O'Rourke's point is right, like maybe kids getting out is in the best interest of the public, that they do get out and play and start getting exercise and returning to normality a bit. But it will be the health executives that will be guiding us.
It would definitely do an awful lot for the sanity of a lot of parents in this country, Marie, if children were allowed out to play football matches, yeah, and burn off some more energy.
Malachy Clerkin had a great column today about the poor old sports fan. We're all suffering with, you know, we didn't realise how into sport we were until it was taken away from us, was the point he made. But he had a brilliant closing line. He said, the sports fan will be all right. We are lost, but we are hardy. We are bereft, but we are hopeful. Mostly, we are sitting here waiting for it all to come back. And he's dead right. That's exactly what we're doing.
Talking about it coming back, I see that the French police, Parisian police even, have given French racing the go-ahead from May the 11th, and the UK are hoping for May the 15th. And as I said a few minutes ago, in Ireland, we have no idea what the hope is in Ireland, but that's just the way it goes.
And what does that mean for you then, Ruby, and for everybody involved in racing, whether it's, you know, working with Willie or just kind of general day-to-day life, just this uncertainty and just trying to make plans?
Look, the horses would be trained every day anyway. Look, the training of racehorses was deemed essential. The care of racehorses, sorry, not the training. The care of racehorses was always deemed essential. So the horses have stayed and maintained fitness and stayed in training. As regards for us with Willie Mullins, is there's going to be a month of flat racing before there's any jump racing anyway. So, you know, we're at least, even if you're being optimistic and hoping racing could get in somehow on May the 18th, it's still 6 weeks away for jumpers, so there's no panic on us, whereas the flat trainers would be taking their horses over, starting to bring them slowly to the boil.
We're very shortly going to talk to Mark Canella, the CEO of Golf Ireland, but first we forgot to mention that golf is back in a box office sense as well, because Rory McIlroy is going to be playing with Dustin Johnson in a charity match against Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff in Florida, and that is going to take place on Sunday, May 17th, and we're going to be able to watch it on television on a Sunday evening, chilling out like the good old days a few months back. And they're going to have to follow social distancing rules and guidelines, so I think at this stage, like, I'm really looking forward to the golf, but I'm also really looking forward to seeing what social distancing sport looks like.
I'd say, you imagine it should be pretty manageable in a golf competition with no spectators. That is the tailor-made driving for relief. It's a skins competition hoping to raise money, being played in Simola Golf Club in Florida. Like, it's on NBC, etc. But it's hard to see why golf can't be played with social distance without a crowd. Should just be like any normal four ball on a Sunday morning in Ireland. Four lads heading on. All right, they'll have caddies and camera crews and whatever else. But I must say, the one, the European Tour, that one intrigued me as well. The virtual golf. Lee Westwood, Martin Keimer, Hugh Luton, Bernard Weisberger, sorry, are playing the BMW Indoor Invitational powered by Trackman, where they're going to play virtual golf. So five competitions. Week one is St Andrews. Week two is Royal Portrush, etc., etc. So virtual golf, I don't know. Can it be as good as normal golf? I doubt it, but at least it'll be something.
Well, at least it's coming back anyway. Well, it's on the horizons, and there are still lots of questions that we need to ask, and we have the perfect person to answer them on the line. Mark Canella, the CEO of Golf Ireland, is with us. Mark, I'd imagine you're very busy today.
Good evening, Marie and Ruby. Yes, I mean we're preparing for the, you know, initial phased opening of golf on the 18th of May. You know, everybody in Irish golf is very excited at the prospect of getting back to play, albeit in a limited and restricted way initially. But it's, you know, it's very good for our sport to, you know, have the opportunity to get back so quickly. And at the moment, we're working out the detail of the protocols, which will, her Ruby mentioned earlier about physical distancing. So there, you know, there are quite a number of measures we're going to need to put in place to ensure, you know, the safety of golfers themselves and the wider community. And we're working to finalise those procedures in this coming week, with a view to getting the information out to clubs by the weekend. So it's a, you know, it's a very exciting time for golf, but we're equally conscious that we're still in a national health emergency here. So, you know, as one of the first major sports to be allowed to resume, we have a big responsibility to make sure it's done safely and responsibly, and we're going to do that.
No pressure, Mark, but we'll be all watching. No, what about some of the specifics, Mark? Will it be members only, or what way is it going to work?
Well, from the governing body point of view, we're going to be recommending, at least in the initial stages, that it should be members only, because we don't want to be, well, first of all, there'll be very little movement around the country, as you know. You know, the government are keen to discourage unnecessary travel. So we feel that, and I think that most golfers actually be quite happy to have the opportunity to play their home courses initially. But, you know, just like the government roadmap, we hope and intend to, you know, incrementally open up golf right through the summer. So, you know, at the appropriate time, you know, green fees will be allowed again. And certainly by the time the hospitality industry is back up and running, we want golf to be a big part of the rebuilding of domestic tourism, which has been so badly hit in the last couple of months. So when tourism and hospitality reopens, we hope that golf and golf tourism will reopen too.
Mark, initially, I guess that's what people are concerned with, is the short term and what means for them and their clubs. And we know that the 5 kilometre restriction is in place for the first little while anyway. And Philip Reid made some very good points in a piece that he wrote in the Times today. And one of them is that some golf courses are actually quite far away from their primary membership base, like Tralee, 13 kilometres from Tralee Town, Connemara, 10 kilometres away from Clifton. What situation are those members in then?
Well, look, these are the issues we'll be teasing out with the government bodies and the health authorities during the week. But I think it's important to say that the travel restrictions, first of all, they're temporary. You know, 3 weeks later, that 5 kilometres will increase to 20 kilometres. And, you know, they're not restrictions that are particular to golf. They're for the entire population. So, I mean, golf is, you know, is part of the community, and all of that overriding health, public health advice applies to golf as much as to any other sector of society. So it will be, I mean, assuming the 5 kilometre restriction applies for the first 3 weeks, it will discommode some golf club members, there's no doubt about that. But I think we do have that responsibility to the wider community as the country begins to come out of this health emergency. And I think when we reach the 8th of June, and the travel restriction increases to 20 kilometres radius, you know, that will capture not all, but the vast majority of members.
And Mark, can we just give us an idea of what, when we turn up at our local golf course, like, will the driving range be open? Will the putting greens be open? Chipping areas? What are the recommended gaps between tee times? Things like that.
Yeah, so these are details we're talking to government about right now, Ruby. So I think it will be quite different to, you know, turning up to play at your club 6 months ago. You know, for example, you will have to book in advance. There will be controls in terms of the size of groups and the tee-off intervals. They'll be greater. I can't say precisely what they are yet until we agree them with government. But, you know, there will be greater intervals between tee-off times, because we don't want groups congregating on tees or at the tees of par three holes, what normally happens when the courses are busy. Because we need, you know, to have effective social distancing, we have to limit the number of people at the facility at any one time, you know, including at the car park and so on. So, you know, golfers will be expected to come, you know, dressed for their game, you know, change their shoes in the car park, go straight to the tee and, you know, leave at the end of their round. There won't be any social aspect. The clubhouse, with the possible exception of the toilet facilities, will be closed for the foreseeable future. So it will be quite different, but, you know, it's a small price to pay for having the opportunity to get back so quickly. So I think, you know, most golfers will be quite happy to, you know, to go along with the regulations. As I said earlier, these will evolve, you know, through the summer and become, you know, these regulations will be eased too, along with the overall health restrictions. But it will be quite different, but you will get to play a round of golf, but there won't be, you won't be spending as much time at the golf club. You'll turn up at your allotted time and play and then go home. And I think we're all happy to have the opportunity to do that.
I think everybody, but, you know, really, I'd say if you gave them six clubs and don't have to carry the bag, they would. But what about the difference then, Mark, in a public club rather than a member-owned one? Will that be able to open too?
Well, as far as we understand from the government statement, I mean, all golf facilities can open. Now, the vast majority, even the proprietary clubs, you know, still are GUI golf clubs. So we will be issuing our guidance and protocols to all clubs. So that will include, and even the most of the municipal courses actually have a golf club as part of them.
And Mark, just from a financial point of view, it's obviously a difficult time for everybody in business and golf clubs are businesses as well. And some of them we know aren't going to reopen again. Like how many do you think are under serious threat?
Well, a very good point, Marie. And, you know, this couldn't have come at a worse time for golf clubs, because, you know, just the restrictions kicked in just at the time of year when they start to get some revenue in, whether it be members, subscriptions, society outings, general green fees, you know, bar and restaurant revenue. So all of that has stopped. Now, we conducted a comprehensive survey of all of our clubs over the last month. And, you know, the feedback is quite alarming, really. We're looking at, and this is based on, a 10-week lockdown. The clubs in the Republic of Ireland losing about 65 million, which is a huge amount of money. We have basically discounted international green fee revenue for the whole year, because it's not realistic to think we will have international visitors during 2020. Clubs are predicting a substantial fall off in membership fees of about 12 million. And then if you think of the other activities that generate revenue for clubs, you know, their bar and restaurant facilities, they're going to be closed for some time. So we're looking at and this is probably a conservative estimate, a loss of about 65 million in 2020, which is very substantial. And even though we are going to have, and we're very grateful to have, the opportunity of getting back to play from the 18th of May, that won't help the financial position of clubs, because, you know, the things from which they generate revenue are not going to be in place for quite some time yet.
Mark, that's going to have huge effects on a lot of our courses in the south and the west of the country. Has there been any indication from government about financial assistance for golf clubs?
Not yet. I suppose, Ruby, when we come towards the end of the health crisis, there's going to be a huge job to rebuild, you know, the economy and society, and sport is going to be part of that. And part of the reason we conducted the survey is to feed into work that Sport Ireland are doing on behalf of all sport, to measure the financial impact on sport, and presumably to make a case to government for funding to rebuild not just golf but other sports too. And I know that Minister Brendan Griffin has been working and liaising very closely with all the national governing bodies in sport, you know, to assess the financial impact. And, you know, I'm quite sure, and he has committed to us, that he will seek funding from government when the time is right for all sport, because, you know, golf won't be the only sport impacted. But it has come at a particularly bad time for golf, because the springtime and early summer is when, you know, the golf season gets going. But we have pretty comprehensive data on that impact, and we have shared that with government, and we hope in due course that there will be, you know, a support package for all sports, including golf.
And just in terms of competitions, we know that they're obviously a big part of golf as well. Is there any decision made on the future of, for example, the interclub competitions?
Not yet, Marie, but we are hopeful that, you know, we will get some interclub action later in the summer. Probably not, though, until we get to, you know, phase five of the roadmap, when, you know, comprehensive travel around the country is allowed. But it is, I mean, all going well, we are optimistic that we can have some of the interclub competitions maybe a little bit later than usual, but I think it's achievable. Where it is more difficult, and this really affects our elite amateur players, you know, much of the international and European calendar of events have either been cancelled or rescheduled. And even though some have been rescheduled for late summer and early autumn, you know, it's very debatable at this stage as to whether it will be safe or advisable for players to travel. But that will be, you know, quite unfortunate for our elite players who have, you know, been working so hard all through the winter in their preparation. But we'll keep a watching brief on that. I mean, the European Golf Association are hoping to salvage a number of their events in the autumn. And, you know, depending on what the travel advice at the time is, we may have some Irish participation in those. But it's too early to be sure about that.
Mark Kennelly, thanks so much for joining us. And just to finish on a positive note, hopefully you might have some new members as well, people that are anxious to take up a sport that they can play.
Well, you know, as we say, Marie, golf is one of the, you know, few outdoor sports that people can play at almost any age. and from the very young to the not so young. And, you know, we hope that, you know, over the summer, you know, more and more people, because all of us who enjoy golf, you know, we love the sport, and, you know, the more people that try it, the more people that will get the bug.
Sure.
Not on the 18th of May, but later in the summer,
yeah,
people will have that opportunity, and we hope plenty of people will take it up.
I'd say there's lots of people with big plans. Mark Kennelly, thanks so much for joining us. Now we are joined on the line by Tony Hughes, who is the captain of Cove Golf Club. Tony, just the fact that golf is coming back, and we know now we have a date, what's the mood like down around the club?
Very positive, to be quite honest with you. Most people are looking forward to it. The clubs have been away now for quite some time, if you like. You know, they're probably the closest they've been to a golf course is their back garden swinging a club. Other than that, you know, people just can't get out, and the weather obviously has a lot to do with it. They're just looking forward to it. Very, very positive.
These beautiful days, Tony, passing us by where people can't
play golf. Yeah,
but obviously Cove, like every other course in the country, has faced maintenance costs, whether it was golf or not, and there's been no revenue, green fee revenue coming in. How have your annual subscriptions kept up?
Our annual subscriptions, we from the start of the year, have been positive. But at the same time, you have to look at if you have a system whereby we have, you can pay up front, first off, in other words, pay your full year sub, or you could pay on a monthly instalment. Now, if a guy is laid off from work, and he's in COVID payment, if you like, it means his income is down. So is he going to continue with his monthly payments, especially if he can't play golf? So the sooner we can get back at golf, the sooner, if you like, the people will have a far more positive attitude from that and say, OK, it's worth paying out, it's worth getting out there, and that type of thing. But we're holding our own. But like other clubs, we will struggle long term. There's no doubt about that.
And Tony, just on a practical level, how have you been set up now for the physical distancing protocols that you're going to have to put in place?
Well, at the moment we're still waiting on the full guidance from the GOI. But prior to the shutdown, if you like, we had certain things in place, like we had rakes removed from bunkers, bins around the golf course removed, so you know your contact there would have been minimum, if you like. Flag sticks, we had a ruling, kind of, if you like, tentative that flag sticks would remain in the hole. Once your golf ball went in, if you like, you just put two fingers in to remove the golf ball. We had a wavin piping to stop the ball going entirely to the bottom. But these are what we came up with ourselves, if you like. The GOI now are going to come out with a full list of recommendations as to what we should and shouldn't do over the next couple of days before clubs are open. Will be open on the 18th. So we'll be depending on whatever guidelines the GOI will give us, and we will adhere strictly to that.
God, Tony, it's going to break my heart when I go looking for my ball in the rough and I find four or five others that don't belong to me and I have to leave them behind me. That's going to be really hard.
Yeah, especially if it's a Pro V.
Oh, I can just imagine them jumping into my pocket magically.
I know.
Tony, we were speaking at the top of the show about children and young people getting out and the value of exercise and just even fresh air. And I know that you've got a good initiative for the Leaving Cert students. Will you tell us a little bit about it?
That's right, yeah. Our committee decided here that to do something to kind of help the kids here within the town, that we would give free membership to Leaving Cert students from the two colleges we have here in Cove, Kailash Tamura and the Technical College as well. So we decided that any boy or girl who was sitting the Leaving Cert in Cove, once we're open, that we'll give them free membership to get out. It's really to give their head a bit of space as well as to give them an exercise, because it's not just physical activity, it's mental activity as well. It is needed. They're under a lot of pressure. Kids are under a lot of pressure nowadays, as you know. And to encourage kids to get out, a bit of open air, a bit of fresh air, exercise and relieve the pressure in some way.
That's a great idea, Tony, and I hope a lot of them pick you up on it. Thanks a million for taking our call, and we're going to take a break.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. Earlier, we caught up with Irish athletics legend Sonia O'Sullivan, and I started by asking her how she's getting on in Australia.
Yeah, not too bad. We're up to but week seven now of limited life, I suppose. We're going okay. We probably haven't had it as hard here as in Ireland and other countries. We've got to stage three restrictions, but we've never really been limited in the amount of distance that we can go from home. And there was a bit of panic buying early on, but I didn't really get involved in that. And everything turned back up into supermarket shelves pretty quick. So we've been managing it, being patient and taking our time with things.
And what's the mood of the people been like? Because here it's a bit up and down. We're having our good days and our bad days.
Yeah, I mean, you do notice that, you can, at the start, everybody was all excited and finding all these new things to do. And it was like as if you weren't allowed to sit still for a second. There were so many exercise videos and different things turning up, but that died down a bit, and then everyone kind of settled into the new routine and the new normal. And there was a few house party apps and Zoom parties. It's like there's something a little bit different every week to kind of distract you a bit. But I think now everybody's ready for the exit, and to find a way out of this.
That seems to be the mood here as well, Sonia. People have had the whole lockdown and are getting anxious and wanting to move forward and looking at ways at how they can do that. How do you see athletics exiting this pandemic? And firstly in Australia.
Yeah, it's it's one of those things you keep trying to work things out. I mean, there's been a few virtual events where people have kind of set up, arranged time trials and different things on the weekend, and then you all send your results in and, see, it's like an online race. And, that's okay for a few weeks, but, you need the competition really and to push people and to give them a reason to go out and to train and to, just be active every day. You just need that something to look forward to. And, definitely for the elite people and Olympic athletes, it's really tough for them, to see, there's no finish line. There's no kind of purpose to what they're doing right now because there's nothing to aim for. And it's all just such this big, wide open space. And it's like, what do you do? You want to keep fit and you want to train hard. And a lot of athletes would have been really fit and, primed to get involved in more qualifying for the Olympics and then to start peaking for the Olympics. And they've just had to put that all on hold. So, it's very difficult to see where it's going to start again. There's even been marathons cancelled, as late as September now. The Berlin Marathon is not on. And some of the spring marathons have been postponed to October, but, they're all a bit up in the air as well. So it probably all depends on when people can fly again and when you can travel. Otherwise, it will be local competitions and, I suppose back to the basics, really, what it was like years ago when people didn't and couldn't travel so far.
And even if you think back to how international athletics is, when you look at your own career, like Monaco, Gothenburg, Helsinki, South Africa, athletics to be staged at elite level really is international.
Oh, it is. And it's even more so now. They go from April all the way through to September being the main track season. And, starting off, it's a bit nearly like the car racing Grand Prix. They start off over here in Australia in the warmer weather and then move to, the Middle East and to China and Japan and then, start moving across the world. And it's like this traveling circus and different people join in as it goes along. And, to go from all of that to nothing is, it's just, I don't know, I find it's very hard to get your head around the whole thing. And when you really think about it, you kind of, how do we get to this? Surely there was it was like everybody was stopped in their tracks without any warning, just all of a sudden. And, it's a bit like when you get an injury and all of a sudden everything's going fine and then you stop and you want to get going again, but you can't start off where you left off. You've got to build back slowly. And, it's going to be the same thing with everything now, with all sports, with all travel, with a lot of work. It'll be a step-by-step process.
Sonny, you obviously coach at the Mentone Athletics Club. What way do you see yourself having to be creative to get athletes back training? Will you have to put an athlete in lane one, one in lane three, one in lane five, one in lane seven. What ways can you get creative to get people back together and back training together?
Well, we're just about planning that now. This week, we still can't really go meet together. You can meet one other person. But even that, it's a bit awkward because there's so many people out and about and you're just getting in each other's way. But from next week, we're hoping that we'll be able to have groups of five. And so we're kind of thinking, well, if we have, you know, around 10 athletes, that we can have two groups of five and have one last start at one side of the track and one last start at the other side of the track. And, you know, just kind of manage it like that, so that it doesn't look like, you know, those pictures you see of when they open things up and everybody's down at the beach and they're all on top of each other. You know, we're going to try and manage it in a way that it's a much more controlled environment. And, you know, just so that it doesn't look like, you know, we've kind of opened the doors and everybody's back in again straight away. But, you know, going to do this gradually. And hopefully, you know, come out of it safely and in one go. You know, you don't want to, you know, take one step forward and then have to take two steps backwards. Like, that's everybody's worst nightmare. I think once we start going forward with this, you just want to keep going forward. You know, I've managed to keep everybody training and motivated the past few weeks. And, you know, just by doing that, it's helped keep me motivated as well. You know, we all become accountable towards each other, you know, just kind of checking in and reporting in, and you can follow people on all those Strava and Garmin, all the different apps where people can upload their training. So people, you know, there'd be little competitions going on and nobody wants to, you know, lose fitness and, you know, not be competitive when eventually we do get back to race again.
And Sonia, for those who are looking forward to an Olympics taking place in just a few months and are now looking to 2021 with hope more than surety that it's going to take place, how are they going to cope during these uncertain times? And any tips for them in getting through this pandemic?
Well, I suppose the big thing is like that you can't really train at a high level right now because, you know, there's no point. So I think, you know, everybody's just kind of bubbling along at a nice level. And, you know, it's a bit of a comfortable level. And, you know, it's when you're training hard, you take yourself out of the comfort zone and you push yourself, you know, to levels that you want to test yourself and be ready for high level competition. But there's no point doing that right now because it's not going to be required for a long time for people to go out there and to line up and to, you know, really get a result. And, you know, even all these little time trials and different things that people do, they don't really mean anything. And, you know, some people are better at it than others, but the real good competitive athletes in any sport, you know, they'll rise to another level when, you know, they're pitted against somebody else and they line up next to somebody else. They just do things that they can never do in training because, you know, you're able to get rid of that voice in your head that trying to tell you that, no, you can't do that. You just block it out and you push beyond, you know, what seems achievable.
And Sonia, looking at maybe an Olympics in July 2021, and people are saying that qualification could be a huge stumbling block. The longer the lockdown goes on, the less chance people have to qualify. Is there any possibility of people getting official remote times to meet qualifications for an Olympics?
I think we're still a long way from even thinking about that. You know, I mean, it's hard to imagine, you know, when you see a big event like the Dublin Marathon, even, you know, in October this year, will that be on? And, you know, the amount of people that takes to be lined up beside each other. If you look at that across every sport, you know, there's a lot of steps to take before we even consider that. So I think a lot of the sports will just have to look at where they're at right now and what athletes and countries had places qualified for the Olympics. And they probably have to change the way they had the qualification set up already and look at things differently. It'll be a much narrower window of qualification. And, you know, there's even question, you know, will the Olympics take place next year? I mean, people are asking that question already. And I can remember when people were asking, will the Olympics take place this year? And there was, you know, people arguing that, yes, they would and no, they wouldn't. And, you know, so quickly they were off. And I think we need to see some progress in just normal life first, and people being able to get out and do normal things, and not kind of, it's like as if you have to overthink everything at the moment, and you know, people are nearly afraid to get anywhere close to anybody, and you know, to be able to overcome that in sport as well as life, will it'll take a long time, and there's no sign yet of how that's going to happen.
The fear is a huge thing for a lot of people. A lot of people are aware or afraid of what might or might not happen with this pandemic. But do you think athletics and sport can show people a way forward by getting training, by getting competing?
I think they will. I think they, you know, sport has kind of inspired people and shown people down through the years what can be done. You know, people, sports people are, they're brave and they're willing to go out there and to push their bodies to the limit. So I think, you know, if they're given an opportunity to do it, and it's probably going to happen, you know, some sports will find ways of doing it quicker than others, and then others will realize that they can do it as well. So, you know, there's a little bit of kind of who goes first and how do they manage it first, and how do we follow suit? I mean, I was here on the weekend and we were sitting around doing a jigsaw puzzle, and there was horse racing going on in the background, you know, and it's kind of weird, you know, you kind of think you're watching it on television and it doesn't look that much different than if there is a crowd there or not, because there's no crowd there, but everything kind of echoes and you can hear the breathing and the noise, you can hear the noises differently. You can nearly hear the jockeys, you know, brushing up against each other, because it's just so much, there's no interaction from the crowd. It's like a different sport altogether. And when you see something like that, you kind of think, well, why can't we have athletes running down together and doing so? Because it's a similar closeness to each other. So, you know, if you could create an environment where you could get, like, they call them hubs down here, because they're trying to set up the AFL and the rugby league to get going again, and have little hubs or little pockets of people around and just create competition. So it'll be nearly set up, but there'll be a little bit of competition in there. And it's just how the different sports react to doing that without having spectators. And, you know, that energy that athletes get from, you know, being in a packed stadium.
Sonia, a lot of people and sports organisations and associations are going to see this layoff as an opportunity as well to make change and to reflect on a way to make their lives better or their organisations and associations better. What could athletics do to just change something for the better during this time?
I think what will be seen, what could change is that athletics could go back to its roots and back to the basics, where there was a lot of competition, you know, within countries individually. So where all the best athletes in their own countries competed against each other. You don't see that as much now. A lot of athletes avoid each other and they go away to races where they can run a fast time. Whereas I think there may be an ability to build some local competition and then give a kind of a pathway for athletes to be the best in their area, to be the best, you know, take a step up and, you know, be the best at a higher level, rather than just going to find races where you're trying to run fast times. So I think we've kind of got away from ourselves, and fast times have become more important than actual competition and head-to-heads. And it may be a way for the public to re-engage with the athletes as well, and to get to know them a bit better, and to see them competing against each other, because the focus will be on smaller fields, so there'll be less people in the races, and so you might know a little bit more about the athletes. And you know, the hard thing is that probably the better athletes will get the better opportunities to compete when it all starts going again. Because if the fields are smaller, then there'll be less athletes invited. But then that will filter down and make the local competitions more important. And, you know, athletes will be ready for any level of competition to go out there and to, you know, just find out where they're at and to get some reward for the training that they've been doing and the time that they've put in all this time. You know, there's not much reward at the moment for all the effort and time put in. And, you know, you need that to give yourself a boost and to get some confidence and, you know, to push yourself forward and to get the better results.
If that were the case and you had stronger national competitions and fewer international competitions, would it up the status maybe of the international races, make them more appealing to terrestrial television and elevate athletics back to, I suppose, the Grand Prix circuit that you used to be on, back to Madison Square Garden's jam-packed if there was fewer international races?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I suppose everything is being diluted and there's just so much on that you normally can't keep up with it. So I think people are craving any competition at the moment that, you know, whatever turns up, everybody's going to be tuned into it and watching it. So it's going to be one meet at a time like that, and there won't be a whole big kind of schedule of meets where people just can't keep track of what's going on. And, you know, even me who would follow it and watch it a lot, there'd be races and events on that you wouldn't even know about. You know, they're on, they're so often. But it's just how to manage that all again and to, you know, I think to value every level of competition and not just the big international races and not just the fast times and the fast shoes and, you know, to get people out there and head-to-head competitions and, you know, I suppose national pride to have dual meets. You know, you might have, you know, more local, like we used to have England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, the home countries would compete against each other, and that was an important meet when I was, you know, just starting out competing internationally. But now that's kind of a low-level meet and it doesn't have the same respect that it would have had when I was growing up, and, you know, some people wouldn't even know what it is. So, you know, it may be that we have to start off with these kind of, you know, national meets, and then, okay, we'll invite a country close by who we think is, you know, we're safe to travel there or we're allowed to travel there before, you know, everybody's borders open up and, you know, it's free for all again.
Sonia, we are all looking forward to sport coming back in some way, make, shape or form anyway. And just like from your own family situation, we have been keeping an eye on Sophie over the last few years. How's she getting on?
So, yeah, she's OK. She's kind of in a bit of a strange situation as well because she's finished school and she's planning to go to college in America starting, you know, when the college term starts in September this year. But, you know, that it's not certain at this stage because of everything that's going on. So she's, you know, kind of training away and keeping fit and, you know, going through the whole process as if everything is going to go as normal. And, you know, there's such a lack of competition for the young athletes this year. It'll be a real testing time for them to get through this. And I think for many of them, it will be good because they will be able to train at a much lower level than pushing themselves as many do, you know, at such a young age, and probably building up a nice endurance base for when they are able to get out there and race and to train hard again.
Good, and we wish her all the success in the future. Sonia, thanks a million for taking our calls, and hopefully we all get back to some bit of normality soon.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah.
Sonia Sullivan speaking to us a little bit earlier. Ruby, interesting her strong views on athletics and the different changes that need to be made to kind of strengthen it and grow it again and maybe someday get it back to those glory days that you mentioned to her.
Yeah, but I think Sonia's view on everything is interesting, Marie. Yeah, look, I think someone that has achieved as much in any sport as Sonia Sullivan has in her own, the views she would have on it should be listened to. Like she's, I don't know, I think she was an incredible athlete and an incredible ambassador for this country, and I would be pretty much thinking that whatever she says should go.
Absolutely, sporting royalty, right? Let's take a quick break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We have had several conversations about the potential return of Gaelic Games. We've spoken to managers, players, administrators, but one voice that we haven't heard is the voice of a referee. So we have called up David Goff, the All-Ireland Football Final referee from earlier. Was it last year? Jeez, it was last year. I've lost complete track now of my time from last year to give us his views on the potential return of Gaelic Games. David, how are things?
Evening, Marie.
I was putting you back there to referee only a few months ago. Well, it was nearly a year ago. Who'd have thought it?
Yeah, we should be starting championship next weekend. That was back 1st of September 2019. And so much of 2020 has passed and not really as much GA has been played as we would have expected.
Yeah, or would have liked, David. So look, we're looking at the 20th of July. If we're just to stick to the government roadmap that they have put out, that there will be GAA behind closed doors. What are your thoughts from a purely refereeing point of view, David?
Well, I'll just speak for myself, Marie. I won't say for other referees, but it's going to be quite difficult for us getting back into inter-county setups, definitely at that stage. Club games might be a little bit easier to deal with, but with my own circumstance, travelling from Dublin down to Meath and picking up four umpires, putting them into a car and then travelling around Meath for a championship match mightn't be the most prudent way to start off refereeing again. And even when you think about just even arriving at a venue, and club venues first of all, there's definitely no club that I'm aware of in Meath, well, maybe Trim, that has a dressing room the size big enough for adequate social distancing for referees and match officials. And certainly at inter-county level, it's the same. There wouldn't be, even in Croke Park, a dressing room big enough for eight match officials to be properly socially distant from one another at the one time. And that's just the start of things. You know, you have simple things like the use of mouth guards, obviously, which I've been quite diligent in refereeing in previous matches. And most GA fans would often have seen players leaving the field and swapping mouth guards with a substitute because they haven't had their own mouth guard with them in order to play. The Mer Ishke, which is now gone, is going to come back into life. We're going to need 15 water bottles minimum per team at any one time. So we're talking 30 water bottles for individuals. And then you have the idea of trying to police spitting on the pitch, which was an interesting comment coming from the Belgian FA last week, where they were proposing yellow cards for players who spat during matches, which will be interesting to know how referees are going to police that. And also, who's going to police us? Who's going to police the referees? Like any of the players, when we exert ourselves and there's too much saliva in the mouth as well, we spit as well. So they're just a few small comments without delving into much greater detail, but they're definitely worth thinking about.
So have you been consulted then about a potential return to play?
We did have our first Microsoft Teams meeting with the National Referees Committee last week. So Willie Barrett, the chairman, the National Match Officials Officer Donald Smith and Bernard Smith from the CCC sat and spoke to us. But it was just in relation to what we can do at the moment to maintain our fitness, you know, with our training, with resistance training, with HIIT workouts and with running, a little bit around delving into the GA archives and looking at previous matches, filling out advisory forms to see what the referee did well and what we might change in the future. And also then we spoke to Kev Leahy from Croke Park, who informed us about Smartabase, the new GA app for us to upload, but nothing about the roadmap for referees getting back out and what's going to happen. And there does need to be a serious amount of thought put into it.
There's no doubt, David, there needs to be a serious amount of thought, but just listening to some of the issues you've raised there, and in such circumstances, would you be willing to drive to the match, ready to referee? Would your umpires be willing to drive themselves to the game in these circumstances? Could each player not bring their own water bottle and be responsible for it? Are there not ways around all the issues you've raised?
Oh, there are.
Other than the spitting, sorry.
Yeah, there are ways around them, Ruby, but they need to be discussed in depth. We're talking about umpires there, Ruby. An awful lot of our umpires would be in the older age bracket. My two umpires, my father and my uncle, they won't thank me for this, but they're just turning 60. And you know, I have to be cognizant of that and their age, and them going home then to my mom or my aunt. And certainly my umpires aren't the most elderly of umpires that are out there. So we need to be very careful around what we're exposing those people who we rely very heavily on And Ruby, you're right, because it is my decision whether I go back. Like, I am a volunteer within the association, like everyone else. So I don't know whether the association is going to fork out for umpires to drive to the matches themselves if they can't go safely in a car. And we haven't even touched on the idea of refereeing in the Ulster Championship, where referees might not feel comfortable coming from the south up to Ulster if different restrictions have been put in place in Ulster than there has been in the rest of the country.
David, we've had a lot of players on over the last few weeks, and the majority of them wouldn't be comfortable playing without a vaccine, mostly because their personal circumstances, living with elderly parents and that. Just from your own point of view, if we don't have a vaccine and the GAA want to come back in July 2020 to need referees, is it something that you'd be comfortable doing, refereeing a match with no vaccine in place?
I'd have to sit down and have a long think about it, Marie. At the moment, I would say no. I'd have to see what developments are made between now and July, but certainly we're not going to have a vaccine in place by July. And with my own personal circumstance, at the moment, I wouldn't be comfortable refereeing matches with no vaccine.
And just on the run the referees are doing for Pieta House, David, I know it's coming up very soon, and there's lots of fundraising being done for great causes. Will you tell us a little bit about yours?
Yeah, Dublin hurling referee Chris Mooney contacted us last week, and he mooted the idea of the National Referees Panel doing a run for Pieta House because the start of the championship, which is due next Saturday, but certainly on the island, not the international matches, coincides with the Pieta House Darkness into Light run, which also, unfortunately, has been cancelled. So there are a total of 72 inter-county hurling and football referees who have gotten behind this initiative. We're going to run 11.2 kilometres each, which is the average distance we would run in a championship match. And that totals 810 kilometres, which, if we worked it out, would be a run from Wexford Park to Páirc Uí Chaoimh, from Páirc Uí Chaoimh up to Páirc McCool in Ballybuffet and back to Croke Park. So we're going to do that all together next Saturday to raise funds for Pieta House.
And David, if people want to support you, where can they find it?
They can find it on GoFundMe. A lot of the inter-county referees also have Twitter pages, and we have links up on Twitter, on Facebook, and I believe a lot of the media outlets and Croke Park will be putting it up during the week as well.
Will it get competitive?
It definitely will get competitive, but I can see Fergal Kelly and Sean Clear pulling well clear. They are two marathon runners. But after that, it'll be very competitive. And we'll have to split it between football and hurling. We couldn't be mixing both.
David Goff, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck at the weekend. Ruby, that is all we have time for.
I wonder, can we have a few quid in those two refs to win that match? That race, even?
At this race,
I was listening.
We'll have nothing else, so we might as well.
Something. Game on 2FM.